Professor Allen's Comics Reading Journal for the month of January 2022. Welcome to episode 80 of this podcast series, aka Work From Home Journal number 23. Or maybe this really is the new normal journal? The concept of the show is for us to have a brief chat about what comic books I've read since the last time we had one of these brief chats, which should make this pretty much, sort of, all of the comics I read during January. These books are listed weekly in blog posts at eyesandearsblog.blogspot.com, and I regularly repost them on my Facebook and Twitter, so you can find those. But those posts are not exactly spoilers for this podcast, since those are just lists. And here, there's a little more review, a little more critique, a little more discussion. But first, there's a little feedback. Sir Dr. Ange was grateful to be named to the relatively geeky roundtable. You earned it, Doc. Grateful to be named to the court. In general, I feel like the pandemic has pulled us apart as people while pushing us closer in some ways. Certainly, the friends I have online have made life much more bearable in these historic times. Thanks for being a great friend and a superb podcaster. Thank you for being a great friend, a superb podcast guest, a pretty great blogger, and a better-than-average doctor. And newly inducted Sir Manuel Carmona appreciated his elevation with appropriate seriousness. It is with a great sense of pride that I take on the responsibility of becoming one of the three new inductees into the Relatively Geeky Podcast Roundtable. I shall not take this honor that has been bestowed upon me lightly. You have my sword. Well, Manuel, I'm not saying we're going to storm the fire and water headquarters anytime soon, but I'm not saying we're not going to do that either. Fortress of Baileytude, look out. Stay vigilant, Manuel. Stay vigilant. Ranger Gord from the Prairie Justice podcast commented, thank you for your own brand of pod magic. Happy New Year to you and yours, Professor. Thank you, Ranger. And we heard from co-listener of the year, Sir Martin of Gray. Thanks for another great show and for the surprise honor. I'm very lucky to be in such great company. Congrats to my co-L-O-T-Y, Luke, and the new knights, Manuel, Laurel, and Ange. Happy New Year, one and all. Billy D. from Magazines and Monsters wrote in to congratulate all of the honorees. And you're not kidding about cheap bins. They're getting tougher and tougher to find, or at least find decent books in those that still exist. I was able to grab some books that were part of a $15 for $10 sale, which at 66 cents per book is good, but it's obviously no quarter bin. Yeah, Billy, like I've said, 50 cents is about the best that I can consistently hope to find around here. I mean, inflation stinks. And also, thinking about the disappearance of quarter bins around here in Central Ohio, that is a personal attack on me, right? I mean, I'm not crazy to think that, am I? And Jason from Hawaii encouraged his Twitter followers to start off the new year by listening to last episode. Thank you, as always, for sharing the aloha, friend. And social media support for last episode came from By Indie Comics Day, Ed Moore from Boom Addiction, Chris Bailey from Quester Days, Chris Lydon 7, J. Jonah Goldstein, the notorious JJG, The Telltale Mind, Dave's Comic Heroes blog, Mark Radulich, Clinton from Coffee and Comics, the new Stop, Let's Team Up podcast, Robert Ludwig, the most sane man among us, Chris from Professor Frenzy, Kirk Spencer, Big Five Army, Karen from Between the Pages, James from Karen, fantasy author Stephen E. Shend, our good friends, the Sutherlands from the Rad Adventures Network, Ben Herman, 123, Kat Randall, Golden Age Pop, Derek W.C. from the Fanholes, Spy Vinyl, Pat from the Longbox Crusade, Logan Garrett, Christopher Willette, and our other co-listener of the year, Sir Luke Giaconetti from the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network. And now, on to the books I read last month. And as I do on this show, I'm categorizing or classifying those books that I read. And first, are comics I read specifically for podcast appearances. The homework books. For Quarterbin, 179, out next month. I read Vision and Scarlet Witch number 1. This is of the 12-issue miniseries. And for this month's Doom Speak, we headed back to the future and read Doom 2099, 22, and 23. And to team up with Mr. Billy D on Magazines and Monsters, where he did a hashtag Sci-Fi Comics Month special, I read a Silver Age classic, Mystery in Space 67. And comics I read for listening to podcasts, and there are certainly a good number this month because DC Infinite app and my love of following along with comic book podcasts when I have the chance, and the app gives me that chance to follow along with a number of DC Comics-themed podcasters. For listening along with older episodes of Rob Meyer's Robin podcast, Everyone Loves the Drake, I read Robin, the Zero issue, and 8 through 11, all of which were written by the excellent Chuck Dixon. These ones have wrapped up Nightfall, Night's Quest, and Night's End, and they're moving into and through Zero Hour. And catching up on a missed episode of another podcast put out by our good friend Derek W.C., a Fanholes episode from 2020, Adventure Comics 418 and 419. Derek covered only the Black Canary stories from those issues, but I went ahead and read the entirety of each 52-page giant. The best stories may well have been those Black Canary tales, although Supergirl and the 1940s-era Dr. Midnight stories weren't bad either. And to listen along with the Lady Laurel, a.k.a. Mountain Flower, and her crew on episodes 66, 67, and 68, very productive month, of the Huntress podcast, I read from the Helena Wayne era of the character, Justice League of America 185, which wrapped up a JLA-JSA crossover event, Crisis on Apocalypse. And then, from the late 90s Grant Morrison run, JLA 16 and 17 with Helena Bertinelli. And then finally, the backup in Wonder Woman 274. I really like that this show jumps around throughout Huntress's history and also covers both iterations of the character, both Helena Wayne and Helena Bertinelli. And sticking with that Justice League theme, I read Justice League America 44 to follow along with the Irredeemable Shag's Justice League International Blah 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 podcast. And on to new comics that we read right off the shelves, and we do actually have one of the paper variety You know, the ones that get a little floppy when you read them. Those ones. And that issue is Lady Mechanica, the Monster in the Ministry of Hell, number 2, from Joe Benitez. And for this new storyline coming out from Image Comics, in this one, again, we get more of Lady M's origin story, both in flashbacks and in conversations in the present day of the story. We see that the monsters in the Ministry of Health are not, in fact, the freaks and untouchable kids who live there, like child Lady M with her mechanical bits, but the real monsters are the doctors and the staff who work there and sort of torture the kids. And we do get an origin for Catherine Winter, one of Lady M's nemeses, and also another epic Joe Benitez centerfold. Good stuff, creepy stuff, but good stuff. And we have another one from Hoopla, because Boom Comics, or at least some of their titles, release on that platform within a week or two, usually, of when the physical comes out. So for me, I read The House of Slaughter, number 3, which left me with the exact same feeling that issue 2 did. And I should go back and copy-paste my thoughts from last month. But I guess I can express the gist of it here. This is a beautiful comic. And it takes place in a well-constructed world. But for me, it falls quite a bit short of the admittedly excellent high-standard setting, Something is Killing the Children, because so far, it doesn't have that dramatic a storyline or as compelling a lead character as the prior series did. But for now, since it doesn't cost me anything more than a Hoopla borrow, I'm sticking with it. And on to the general comic book reading that I did, and spoilers, it's not very much. From Kirk Spencer, a couple of issues from Chuck Dixon, Winter World, 4 and 5. This is a survival story that takes place in a future where our planet has become a frozen wasteland. The story follows a survivor named Scully and a teenage girl named Wynn, who have teamed up to try to find Wynn's parents. Great setup, interesting world, and because it's Chuck Dixon, lots and lots of gunfire. Kirk also sent a book recently that was a two-parter, so I went to the DC app to finish up the storyline from Super Friends 45 and 46, featuring a team of international heroes, Bushmaster, Godiva, Rising Sun, The Olympian, Little Mermaid, and Wild Huntsman. That was by far my favorite part of the story, the cool cast of characters. The story itself, you know, it was okay. Issue 46 also had a wild backup story featuring the Seraph, who has to eventually get some props on the Dorkness to Light podcast, you know what I mean? And some kid books I read mostly from Sir Rob Lance, but also a good chunk from Pulp Reality, or Hoopla. I ended up reading Veronica 72, Richie Rich Diamonds 12 and 48, Everything's Archie, 3172 and 132, Archie's pal Jughead 207 to 212, Sad Sack 280, Sad Sack Army Life Parade 41, and Underdog number 9. Underdog was one of my absolute fave tunes growing up. And this wasn't a bad comic book, truth be told. The Jughead issues came to me in an Archie Digest from Sir Luke of the Upstate. It collected this 6-issue run in which Jughead has a blowout with his parents and moves out. And for each of the 6 issues, he tries living with one of his Riverdale pals. Archie, of course, Ethel, Moose, Veronica, even Reggie. But Juggy's unique attributes make him a tough roommate. Even the local teen counselor, Trula Twist, can't totally solve this dilemma. In the end, parents and teen come to an understanding and order is properly restored. But it was a good, ongoing storyline. All right, time to take a break here. And when we come back, we'll talk about graphic novels, trade paperbacks, long runs, and seasonal reading that I did during January.
There's something like 115,000 English language podcasts in the world, and no doubt hundreds of them are aimed at the comic book genre.
There are sci-fi comic podcasts.
Horror comic podcasts.
War comic podcasts!
But do you know what we need?
You guys crazy enough to combine those fields and make a podcast of their very own?
Yes. It's the answer to a question no one asked, so that's why we are answering it. Such a gaping hole in the podcast landscape must be filled post-haste.
Did you really just use the word post-haste?
The Weird Warriors podcast covers the Weird War Tales comic book series published by DC Comics from 1971 to 1983. Along the way, we'll also check out other horror and war comics published by DC, Marvel, Charlton, and any other targets that may present themselves to us.
I have the war books, and he has the horror books. So if you're ready to take a nice, relaxing look at the hell of war in comic book form from the age of the caveman to the distant future, then report for duty by subscribing to the Weird Warrior Podcast, brought to you by the Brothers Flea, wherever fine podcasting provisions are issued.
Vampires!
Aliens!
Dinosaurs!
Alien dinosaurs!
There's something for everyone.
General Sherman said war is hell, but do you know what else is?
Weird.
For our purposes, yes. So tune in to the Weird Warrior Podcast today. Do it! That's an order!
Yes, sir!
Don't call me sir, I work for a living.
But we're not getting paid for this.
Dang!
Well, I'm Max.
And I'm Rich.
And we're going to be bringing you the Weird Warriors Podcast, where we will promise to make war
no more.
And we're back to talk about trades, long runs, and miniseries that I read last month, but mostly, almost exclusively, seasonal reading, which for January meant hashtag sci-fi comics month. One of the things about science fiction is that it crosses over with or gets very close to a range of other genres. General superhero stories can often be classified as sci-fi. Fantasy and sci-fi rub up against each other. Adventure stories and sci-fi crossover. And for purposes of this segment, I took the widest view of sci-fi that I could. Just about everything that could possibly fall into that category, I counted this month. These came from a variety of sources, which I'll do my best to identify as I go. So listed more or less in alphabetical order, we've got a comic series based on a licensed property that I know Sir Dr. Ange is a big fan of. Blade Runner 2029, 1 through 10. This is a current series. It went 12 issues and only these 10 were on Hoopla so far. I read the prior series, Blade Runner 2019, a year or so ago, and enjoyed that one a lot. And so far, I've enjoyed this one a lot. We have a former, or more or less current, Blade Runner named Ash, and she is tasked with rooting out Jotun, a replicant who has somehow outlived his expiration date and is now the leader of a replicant guerrilla army. We've got lots and lots of cool battle sequences, some mysteries, a good amount of backstabbing, all the elements you need in a near-future sci-fi dystopia. I've been impressed with where Titan in particular has taken the Blade Runner comic books when they've had the franchise. They've been generally and consistently quite good, and there were some excellent issues in this series. Cave Carson has an interstellar eye, number one. was a very weird book. I know. It was the end of the Young Animal imprint, so of course it's weird. But even given that, this one was weird. Not sure what to make of it, and I'm not sure I'm going to read the rest of it. The best part was that Cave has a podcast. Challengers of the Unknown 21 from 1961. Two solid stories. One featuring the tried-and-true plot of Hollywood, setting up fake scenarios to get footage of heroes to make movies from, which must violate so many laws. Although, maybe not back in 1961. That issue led me to the DCU app to see what other Challengers issues were there, and unfortunately, there were none from the classic run, but I did gladly read some from the late 70s revival. Challengers of the Unknown 82 to 87. I remember these when they came out, read them, and remember enjoying them. It is a single long interconnected story, which I think was unusual for the time. The Challengers do some time travel in this, and both Swamp Thing and Deadman are involved in the entire story. Rip Hunter was there too because of the time travel. I really love Deadman and enjoyed his presence here. This was an attempt to Bronze Age the team, I think. It was a more mature story. There were struggles and jealousies among the Chals, a level of seriousness and intensity that the Silver Age takes didn't always get to. It wasn't a great story. I don't want to oversell it, but I did enjoy it. Probably some nostalgia at work there, to be honest. Classics Illustrated 105 and 133 from the 50-cent bins at Pulp Reality. These are two classic SF tales, From the Earth to the Moon by Jules Verne and The Time Machine by H.G. Wells. Throwback stories in throwback comic book style, although they probably weren't thought of as throwback when the comics were originally released in the mid-1960s. So the art and layouts were not trying to be dramatic. They were just there to tell the story in a workmanlike fashion. But these were like 40-some pages each, so they were able to tell a lot of their respective stories. Earth to the Moon had a lot more words than The Time Machine, but both seemed to fully tell their stories from what I could tell. Nothing seemed out of place, plot-wise, although I'm not sure there was a lot of character development here. Again, I don't know how much the original novels had in terms of character development either. But good reads. Classics Illustrated are generally very solid literary adaptations. Doctor Who, Empire of the Wolf, 1 and 2, from Titan Comics. This is the start of a crossover storyline featuring the 8th and 11th Doctors, a.k.a. Paul McGann and Matt Smith. And they each have a companion of sorts, two versions of Rose Tyler. These are the ones from the alternate dimension and the one who is the emperor of the Empire of the Wolf, like Bad Wolf. And there are two TARDISes as well. And if any of those words all make sense to you, congratulations, you are a Doctor Who fan. If it all sounded like gobbledygook, congratulations, you have a life. Again, I'll give props to Titan Comics. I think they've done very well with their license. And this certainly is an interesting premise and a good start to a story. And a modern reboot for a classic character from 2015, Flash Gordon 1 and 2, published by Dynamite, written by the team of Acker and Blacker. This version relies too much on humor for my tastes, humor that isn't dated by topical references or anything like that, but humor that seems wildly dated based on its vibe, based on its feel almost. And I was hoping for a more classic-style, action-packed, rock'em sock'em sci-fi action story. And these ones weren't that, so to my mind, they fell a bit short. And Luke Giaconetti sent in a completely falling apart copy of Iron Man 111, which totally takes place, pretty much, in outer space. So, sci-fi! This one features old Shellhead and Jack of Hearts taking on the Knights of Wundagar. Good stuff. And I even liked the one page on Earth where Whitney Frost is supervising a rebuilding project for Tony. Good issue overall. There are not nearly as many in this genre from Archie as we had last month for holiday books or next month for romance books. But I did read Jughead's Time Police, 1 through 5. This is the 2019 version of the concept that first appeared in the late 80s or early 90s. In this take, January McAndrews comes back from the 29th century to recruit Jughead to the future to set the timeline to rights, a timeline messed up by Jughead himself. Turns out that Jug is a pretty big celebrity 900 years from now, as the Riverdale Museum testifies. But an evil Jughead from a different timeline is doing whatever he can to stop the timelines from being corrected. So along with a few other Jugheads, including an old man Jughead, our hero Forsyth saves the day. Fun, entertaining, light science fiction, very light, but with a nice sense of humor. This collection also contained a reprint of the first ever Time Police story from Archie Giant Series 590 from 1988. It's a similar story, similar setup, and I'm pretty sure I've read that one before. There are a lot of alternate Archie stories or setups that don't work for me. Archie 3000, Prehistoric Archie, even Little Archie. But this one worked very well in both iterations, I thought. For one thing, there was an attempt to tell a story and not just create a new setting in which to tell similar jokes to the standard Riverdale setting. Logan's Run 1 and 3 from Marvel from the 70s. You've probably heard this story before, but Marvel got the license and then took 6 issues to adapt the movie, and then put out 2 issues going beyond that, similar to what they, were doing with Star Wars. The only minor technicality was that the license did not allow for that, and the comic was abruptly canceled after, I think it's 2 more issues, 8 issues in total, right at a cliffhanger. But these 2 issues are from the adaptation era and are very good. I like that movie a lot. And obviously, with 6 issues in the 1970s, you are able to cram a lot of the movie into the issues. And the likenesses aren't too bad either. So overall, I'd say these are pretty interesting comics. And from Valiant, from 1993, via Kirk Spencer, I read Magnus, Robot Fighter 25. I like the futuristic setting of this title, and I like the mandatory robot fighting, which has to happen in every issue. But this issue itself was part of a crossover with Rye and others in the Valiant U, so key dramatic parts of the issue were lost to me. But the robot punching scene, that really worked. And from a care package sent in last year by Kirk, I read a good chunk of a classic independent sci-fi series. These were the color versions of Nexus 4 through 10, which wrapped up the title's time at Capital Comics, and then, after a year off, picked up at First Comics. This is Baron and Rude telling a pretty compelling story. Bunch of compelling characters, as are many of the weird and funny and strange characters that just show up for an issue or two. It's overall a pretty good setup, a pretty good storyline. So far, at this point of the run, it's been a series of one or two or three part stories, all loosely interlinking, you know, to tell a big picture story. But the individual stories are interesting. Nexus's character, I like that. He has painful, excruciating dreams, which reveal to him the identities of mass murderers. And in exchange for the powers that he's received, he needs to kill them. But this he needs to do in order to defend his homeworld, a lunar refuge named Ilum. Very good, very thought-provoking and interesting sci-fi storytelling. Solid series, and I look forward to continue reading it at some point. And a character I'm really growing to like, both in prose and comics, from AC, Adventure Comics, 1991, in black and white goodness, the one-shot Retief, the giant killer. Retief is a strange type of character. He's non-traditional for a hero, especially for a comic book hero. His superpower, quote-unquote, if you will, is diplomacy, negotiation. He is a freelance diplomat, and in this case, he has to extricate an old friend from a situation where the friend has been arrested for violating protocol and tradition on a strange planet, and so now has to kill a dinosaur-type being in order to save his life. So, Retief has to fast-talk his buddy out of trouble, and then still somebody has to kill the dinosaur. Like I said, it's a strange character setup for a comic book, but something about this character, this issue, really worked for me. And from IDW, from just 2020, Star Trek Year 5, number 10, sent in by Sir Iowa's Joe, he of the excellent 21st Century Boys podcast. Very good story, wrapping up a storyline where Sulu has to deal with an all-out war on an alien planet after Chekhov made a little mistake involving a phaser. I should have saved this one till next month, seeing as Sulu does some smooching with an underwater alien. A fun issue. And a complete Star Trek miniseries from IDW, Deep Space Nine 1 through 4 from 2017. This one is written by the Tiptons and is a pretty fun, complete adventure. Many beings are flocking to DS9, overcrowding the bays and the public areas. Only Quark doesn't mind the extra business, and suspicion falls on him for attracting the crowd, for causing this crowd. Turns out that there's a rumor of stolen Bajoran treasure, and the map is hidden on the inside of the station, like scratched into various locations inside the inner workings of the station. As in, people are pulling off panels and poking around behind the pipes and walls and pieces of equipment, vandalizing themselves through a treasure hunt. But Sisko and Odo and the team manage to solve the crisis in a pretty enjoyable way. Nice, complete story, beginning, middle, and end. And then one of the many Star Trek crossovers that have been published in the last decade or so. Star Trek Legion of Superheroes 1 through 6, issue 1, was sent in by the Lady Laurel, and I liked it enough to get the rest in trade from Hoopla. Good story, with Vandal, Savage, and Q explaining the time travel and dimension hopping. But the key to a book like this, in addition to the likenesses, which are pretty good for the original series crew, but the key is the character moments, how members of the teams relate to each other. And the best examples of that in this mini are Spock and Brainiac 5, working on the science and logic details of everything, and Kirk hitting on Shadow Lass, and Shadow Lass completely shutting him down. It's silly, but it's fun. And if you get into any of these crossovers looking for that silly and fun, I think often you'll end up satisfied. And a series that is seasonal, not just because of hashtag Sci-Fi Comics Month, but also because of Disney Plus, I read Star Wars, War of the Bounty Hunters, Alpha, and 1 through 5. This is the story of Boba Fett getting Han Solo from the Carbonite Chamber to Jabba the Hutt, and the wild adventures he has along the way. Basically, all of the bounty hunters know of the Han Solo bounty, so anyone who can intercept Boba on his way to Jabba, they can get all the credit. And all the credits. All of the characters we would expect do show up. Other bounty hunters. But also Leia and Luke and Chewie and Lando. They all show up at a scene where Han is to be auctioned off to the highest bidding bounty hunter. And of course, Han Solo shows up every few pages, although he is a bit cold in this era. Good series, and for many reasons, good timing. And a title that represents a genre that is on that fine line between sci-fi and fantasy, but this one is closer to SF. So I'm satisfied reading this month Steampunk 1 through 5. This was created by Chris Boccolo and Joe Kelly, published by Wildstorm. Less actual steampunk in the way that I like it, more futuristic 90s style grimdark with a bit of Victoriana thrown in. So, just not really to my taste, to be honest. And a movie tie-in from 2002, The Time Machine, Special Collector's Edition. The comic was nothing, really, but just one comment from a finance professional. If an item says Collector's Edition, especially if it says Special Collector's Edition, believe me, it is not. And an issue of a title I've covered on the Quarterbin once, Time Warp Number 4. Now, don't tell anyone, okay? Let's just try to keep this a secret, but I paid like $3.50 for this issue. Look, don't blame me. I was swept away in the joint fervors of realizing how easy it would be to fully collect a 5-issue series and wanting to support my LCS. So there you go. I go crazy and spend an outrageous amount on a single comic. But you know what? I'm not saying it was worth it. I'm just saying it was a pretty good issue with some solid classic style of sci-fi stories. My favorite was a George Kasdan story in which a time-traveling astronaut is sent out with the common cold in her system because those germs will be able to save the future Earth from a coming cloud plague. But the future Earth technology is so advanced that it eliminates her cold before she can emerge from her capsule, thus dooming Earth. A story that truly lives up to Time Warp's catchphrase, doomsday tales, and other things. Although I still think they could have workshopped the "and other things" part of that. But still, good issue. Twilight Zone number 8 from Now Comics in the 90s. I covered an issue of this very recently on the Quarterbin, and that one was way better than this one. This was a decent one-off sci-fi story, I guess, of colonizing an alien world, but there wasn't much that was Twilight Zone about this. And a reprint of a 1954 EC classic, Weird Science Fantasy number 4. This issue is a collection of 1- and 2-page case studies of UFO contacts, comparing the facts of these stories with the official Air Force explanations. And the USAF comes up wanting in terms of explaining these weird phenomena. About 5 years ago, it must have been, I found a pile of old sci-fi magazines at half-price books and grabbed a dozen or so. Analog, Asimov's, fantasy and sci-fi mags like that. And since then, I've scrounged used bookstores and comic shops for old mags, And even though I've read a ton of these over the last few years, I have a pile that is, well, pretty high. But one of the ones that I read maybe 6-8 months ago, I think it was an analog from the mid-70s, had a short story, or maybe a novella, co-written by future best-selling author and TV show creator George R.R. Martin, along with noted author Lisa Tuttle. And Kirk Spencer recently sent me a comic adaptation of that story, the OGN Windhaven. The original story I remember being very good, and the adaptation is pretty much just as good. The basics of the story are a world of islands, in which communication is provided by a guild of people who are entrusted with a limited number of metal wings to ride the air currents from place to place, delivering messages and so forth. And over the years, a series of traditions have developed regarding the flyers and how the wings are passed on from flyer to flyer. And a young woman named Maris wants to change that system. And we follow her entire and pretty long life, seeing how her life and how her work changes the lands and affects the role of the flyers. Very good adaptation, quite a good graphic novel. Thank you, Kirk. And here we have a property that could be considered horror sometimes, but I'm putting it here as sci-fi, which it more often than not probably really is. These are from Topps Comics, The X-Files, 25 and 26, and 35 and 36, which are a pair of two-parters that I picked up from the dime sale last year. One of these is a Wendigo story featuring a troop of wilderness scouts working on their survival training in a snowy wilderness and it not going all that well. Then there's a mob-based story with Mulder and Scully offering witness protection to a fellow who's ready to testify, and they have to protect him not just from other mobsters, but also from the demons who are on his trail. It's an interesting variety of story types, which does feel like the first few seasons of the TV show. Not bad comic books, but I'll be honest, not great either. Though I have to give Alex Sevier credit on the art, because Mulder and Scully and even Skinner, the likenesses are terrific. And I know this because I showed a panel to my wife of just Mulder and Scully, no context, and I asked who she thought these people were. And she got it instantly. So that, to me, is evidence that the likenesses were top-notch. I've read a bunch of these comics before from Topps, and they're generally, and I'm going to say surprisingly, decently, pretty good. Well, all right, that was a good collection of sci-fi books. Of all the genres, sci-fi is probably my favorite in terms of comics, novels, movie and TV, short stories I mentioned, those sci-fi magazines. Now, fantasy is close. I love me my epic fantasy series. But sci-fi is probably number one. And in terms of comics, there really are so many good sci-fi titles. I thoroughly enjoyed participating in this genre exercise this month. And as much as I read, the stack of comics for next January is already pretty tall. Here at the end of the month, I'm realizing the comics that I didn't read at all, or didn't read much of. Shatter, Retief, Star Trek and Star Wars, Far Sector, and the DC series like Star Hunters or Sun Devils. And so little of the Challengers or Adam Strange is on the DC app so far. There's just so much sci-fi out there that I feel like I just dipped my toe in it this month. But I'm sure I'll read some more from this genre throughout the year, and certainly when next January rolls around. Now, next month, in a bit of a change of pace, we'll be doing some hashtag romance comics month reading. Now, normally, when I get to the end of the genre seasonal reading segment, that usually brings us to the rest of what I read in that month. but I read so much sci-fi that there isn't anything else to go over. And so, I think that's everything. In terms of my favorite reads of the month, Lady Mechanica number 2, of course, was very good. I guess steampunk does count as sci-fi, so I include it there as well. That Windhaven OGN was very good. I enjoyed the Star Wars Bounty Hunter issues, Time Warp, Nexus, really solid. But in terms of my absolute favorites, I'd have to go with, and Sir Dr. Ange will be very happy to hear this, Blade Runner 2029, and probably in terms of an issue, probably go with issue 1, which set it all up. So that was my favorite read of the month. Next month, I'm not really sure what I'm going to be reading other than some of those lovey-dovey kissy books for February. But other than that, who knows? But whatever I do end up reading, I will be here to talk about those books that I read during February in an episode that ought to be out in early March. Feel free to let me know what you think of this episode, what you think of any of the books that I've mentioned, especially if you've read any of them. You can send that feedback via email, relativelygeeky@gmail.com, or as a comment on the Facebook and blog post for the episode. The blog is at relativelygeekypodcast.blogspot.com. You can follow the network on Twitter at relatively_geek. And, of course, the network has its own page on Facebook as well. Come join us. All are welcome. Thanks for listening. And keep the pages turning.